Hello and welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners and podcast listeners everywhere. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx.
She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York. Follow her voice, a straight talk is nice. She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, oh yeah. Don't be surprised if you wanna listen twice. Make decisions, find the right choice. Know yourself better, find your own voice. It's okay if you need help today, cause everybody needs a little push. From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.
Welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx. This weekly show airs every Wednesday on Transformation Talk Radio and podcast stations everywhere at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Welcome to Women Who Push for More. This is where I interview enterprising, self-aware, and confident women who strive to achieve more in every aspect of their lives and have learned to never settle for less than they are worth. Inspiring and empowering stories of true pushy broads whose strength and courage makes us all want to be women who push for more. Welcome to my show, which started about 6 weeks ago, called Women Who Push for More. I've been on Transformation Talk Radio for quite some time now, but I'm rolling out this brand new show to give women a chance to inspire and encourage other women. Today, I have a very special guest with me that's going to tell you about her fabulous adventures. I'd love to introduce to you a woman named Emma Warren, and she has an Instagram site and a Facebook site called Walk, Scramble, Climb. I know that you will be very interested in hearing what Emma does and how she is a woman who pushes for more. Transformation Talk Radio listeners, welcome Emma Warren.
Oh, lovely to have me on. Thank you very much, Ellen.
I'm so glad that you're with me today. We started to talk about the fact that I sent out a post because I wanted to interview women who had amazing stories about how they were their own true pushy broads and how they pushed for more. And I want to share with our listeners a little bit about what you said and the email that attracted me. And then I want to talk about that with you.
Okay. Yeah.
You said that at the age of 18, you decided to cross the Silk Route on a rock climbing expedition, traveling from London to Hong Kong. At 25, you led a bunch of climbers from South Africa overland to Jordan. You've led expeditions all over the world. You live in the UK right now in the Welsh mining village of Llanberis, which is famous for its rock climbing. And you have a Facebook site called Walk, Scramble, Climb. So my first question to you is, how did the excitement come to you to begin to rock climb? How old were you when that started?
So when I was 18, I was really wanted to have a year out before university. So when I was doing my A-levels, I went on an expedition with school at the age of 17 to India, and that kind of sparked my passion for travel. So kind of in my last year of A-levels, which is what you do before you go to university in the UK, I was already like starting to think, right, I want more of this. I had such an amazing time trekking in the Indian Himalayas as a 17-year-old that I thought, I want to do more of this. So I went with my mum to the Daily Telegraph Travel Show, which is like a big newspaper in the UK. And they have this travel show with lots of ideas of where to go traveling. And I picked up a brochure, and there was a tiny weeny advert for this rock climbing expedition. And I saw that and I thought, wow, that sounds cool. It was literally about four lines. It just said, the Silk Route climbers wanted. And I thought, well, I've done a little bit of climbing at school, on school trips, not really much, you know, on some adventurous activity holidays. And I was a gymnast as a child, so I was always quite athletic and very sporty. And I saw this advert, so I sent off for this brochure, and it was just this amazing brochure full of, you know, about all the different countries. And I just thought, wow, I want to do it. So I phoned the guy up, a guy called Stuart Marlowe, who's sadly not with us anymore, and he invited me to meet him. And I'm, you know, 17 at the time, and I travel up to London and I meet him on his houseboat. And he's quite a character, obviously. He's doing these crazy things. And we had a brilliant time. And he said, right, well, you need to learn to rock climb. So I thought, okay. He said, he invited me down to these rocks called Harrison's Rocks, which are just south of London. They're like sandstone rocks. Took me climbing, and we had a, I think I fell off and actually hurt myself, but kind of got up and laughed. And he was like, you'll be fine. and then that was it. And then I had to kind of broach the subject with my parents and kind of said, I'm doing it, basically.
Well, that was more than broaching the subject. You already were a woman who pushed for more and said, this is what I want. This is what I'm doing. It doesn't matter that I'm 17 and technically considered still a minor. This is what I'm going to do. And just went off to do it with very little experience, but certainly courage and gumption and a sense of, I can do this.
Yeah, most definitely. I think when you're young, well, I don't know. I think you don't see the negatives. You don't see what you can't do. You just see what you can do, which I kind of wish I had more of that now. I'm getting a bit older now. But I love that period of my life where you just say yes to things. You just don't even think about the consequences. I think it's brilliant. It's a brilliant time to be in, to embrace that time in life. It's great. Definitely the time to start having adventures anyway.
It definitely is. And I know that you say you're getting a little older now and certainly still a very young woman.
Yeah.
But we all go through this, right? It seems the older we get, the more feelful we get and the more hesitation we have. Still, as a young woman, saying yes to everything has its drawbacks as well, obviously. It does. Yeah. Okay, so here you are with this wonderful gentleman and this expedition. Talk to us about the Silk Route, how long it took and what it was like and who you traveled with. Give us an idea.
Right. So the truck was a big Scania truck and it was built in a barn in Oxfordshire. So made into an overland truck. And it even had a climbing wall on the back, which was pretty cool. So I met the rest of the team literally at Dover, at the docks. My parents drove me up, which was very nice of them. And met all these other climbers. Most people were in their 20s, who I thought were incredibly grown up as a young, just turned 18-year-old. And yeah, off we went. So the first place I guess we went to was in France, across the Channel. And we got just south of Paris, there's an area called Fontainebleau, which is like this amazing bouldering venue. So bouldering is climbing without ropes on kind of big, big boulder rocks. And it was just great fun. There was a lot of climbing. There was a lot of drinking and partying when you're young. So it was like the ultimate party, traveling, climbing truck. It was just, you know, as a young 18-year-old, it was just like the best thing ever. Good time.
Well, how could it not? But of course, something so dangerous like boulder climbing and beer may not mix.
Yeah, maybe we didn't do it drunk. But and you have things called bouldering pads. So it's a bit like a crash pad. So you put that at the bottom of the boulders, the rock, and then your friends spot you so that if you do fall off, you don't hit your head, or they can catch you, or they can steady you. So it's actually a relatively safe way of climbing as long as you look after each other. And if in Fontainebleau, the landings are actually often very flat. It's quite sandy soils, and it's one of the most famous places to go climbing. If you Google Fontainebleau climbing, it's one of the world leading places to climb. So yeah, it's fab. So that was kind of our first stop.
Okay. And then you went along from there to many, many stops, correct?
Yeah, so we went France, Italy, Greece, Turkey, Iran, Pakistan, India, Nepal, Tibet, China, then Hong Kong. That was the route. And stopped in some amazing places to climb. You know, in Greece, there's a place called Meteora, which is these huge sandstone columns with kind of rocks and pebbles kind of in, it's like a conglomerate kind of rock. And there's even monasteries on the top of some of these towers. It's just mind-blowing. It's an amazing place to climb. And at that point, I'd never like led a climb. I wasn't going first. I was getting dragged up by people because I didn't really know what I was doing. So yeah, it was great.
But you were still learning, which is a wonderful mm-hmm. thing. It sounded like you had a great group of people that were willing to teach you.
Yeah.
So how long did that whole expedition take?
I think it was about 7 months in total.
Wow. So did you save up enough money beforehand to go? How did you get the funds to make this happen?
Well, it was quite a cheap trip considering what we did. So I think it cost about £4,500. I had been working at the local supermarket, so at a Waitrose all through sick form. I also used to clean someone's house on the weekend as well to save up. And then my granddad had passed away and I also gain some money from that too. So the combination of all those things, I had this kind of pot of money, and luckily the trip, once we were on it, was actually very cheap because the evening meals and breakfast were provided, but that involved us actually cooking on a fire. So we wild camped almost everywhere. So we camped every night and there would be different jobs on the truck. So some people would be the fire starters. So that was my job. I lit the fire every day. Wherever we stopped, my job would be collect firewood, light the fire. So I was a bit of a fire starter. And then other people, and then like on a rotation system, it would be cook duty. So you do two dinners and two breakfasts and then another set of people. So there's up to about 20 people on the truck.
And you slept on the truck?
No, we didn't sleep. We slept in tents. So all the camping gear was kept in our lockers.
In the truck.
And everything like that. So we had, there was like lockers on the side, big hold-all bags with your clothes, your climbing kit, your tent, your sleeping bag.
So that was your first foray into rock climbing, and certainly a taste for a tremendous adventure, and certainly an experience that is carried with you for the next 20 years, correct?
Yeah.
That was the beginning for you, those 7 months. And you said the person that started this is no longer with us.
Yeah, Stuart.
I'm sorry about that. Have you managed to maintain any friendships from the 20 people that you traveled with?
Oh, yeah. So, well, like some of my really great friends, you know, we all live in different parts of the country, some in different parts of the world. But when you phone someone up and have a chat or meet up with them, it's literally... it's like any good old friendship, isn't it? When you've done something like that, it doesn't matter if you haven't seen each other for 5 years. Yeah, but I've got a couple of close girlfriends I do talk regularly who were on that trip.
So here you are, come back from a world tour and searching outdoor adventure, and you are going on 19, I guess. And what happened from there? How did you pursue this situation going forward? Did you make a career out of it? Tell us about this journey.
Well, so my university results, I got good results, and I was due to go off to Swansea University in South Wales to do geography. But I met a guy on the truck called Ben George, and he had just finished university and he had done a degree in outdoor and environmental education. And I thought, wow, that sounds cool. He was off to work at Outward Bound in Hong Kong. So he was going to finish the trek, finish the expedition and then start his new job. And I thought, wow, that sounds really cool. So I phoned my mum from China and I said, I don't want to do geography at Swansea anymore. I want to do this degree in outdoor education. And my dad wasn't very happy because obviously he wanted me to go to a traditional university and do a traditional degree. But my mum knows what I'm like and she's quite a strong woman, I guess, and maybe that's where I get it from. And she said, go for it. So I did, and off I went off to Liverpool to study this. Liverpool John Moores had an amazing, one of the oldest outdoor education degrees in the country. And that's where I went. So I did 3 years there. But I also did a lot of geography modules like glaciation and fluviology and natural hazards and applied geomorphology and things like that. So that if I wanted to go into teaching, which I later did, I had enough credits, I guess, to do a geography-based teacher training.
So even then you had the foresight to go forward. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. Are you ready to transform and empower your life by changing the way you think, feel, and act? Then it's time to schedule a coaching call appointment with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified empowerment coach and recovery coach. My style of coaching is part cheerleader and part drill sergeant, always in your corner and at the same time giving you the push you need to truly move forward and exactly what you need to take command of your life. If you are ready for the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I am ready for you. Visit my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says one-on-one coaching. Make an appointment today. Welcome back, Transformation Talk Radio listeners and podcast listeners everywhere. This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. You're listening to my show, Women Who Push for More. I am having an amazing conversation with Emma Warren, who is a rock climber and an expedition leader. We're talking to her at her home in Llanberis, which is in Wales, at the foot of Wales' largest mountain, Mount Snowdon. She's telling us about the beginnings of her journey into rock climbing and how she began to make it a true career. Let's continue her story on Women Who Push for More. Well, you said some very interesting things, and we'll talk about that for a minute about what you've studied. But I really do appreciate the fact that I think that Pushy Broads, which, as we know, as I gave a backronym to be powerful, unafraid, self-aware, hardworking, young at heart females, normally get their start from other Pushy Broads, from women who pave the way many times. And it sounds like your mother is one of those women.
Yeah, my mum is, she's only tiny, but she's a force not to be reckoned with. I don't think she might be saying that, but she did some quite, for her time, you know, she's 70 now, but she went to a grammar school. She was very intelligent, you know, got great A levels, could have gone off to university straight away. And she said, I don't want to go straight to university. I want a career. So she joined the police and she joined as a cadet. And back then, in probably the 60s or 70s, there weren't many women police officers. So I guess she was already making her own little waves. So she went off to university through the police. So they wanted more graduates and she actually got paid to go to university. So lucky her. It costs a lot of people a lot of money nowadays, but she was very lucky. Yeah, timed it right. But she also had an adventurous spirit. And actually, a lot of things have come out as I've got older of things she's done. Like she went off to Cape Wrath as a young cadet on this course called a John Ridgway course. And he was kind of pioneering at the time for his adventurous activities. They would be asked to jump off a boat, take all their clothes off and swim to shore with their clothes in a bag and survive on an island for a week without. And she went and did all things like that. And it's only since I've got older that she's kind of come out with more of these stories. So yeah, she's actually she's a bit of a dark horse really, my mom. She'll never tell you, you know, she would never, yeah.
Well, she sounds wonderful, and she also sounds like somebody I would like to have on my show. So ask her if she wants to have a conversation with me, quite honestly and truly, because it's really important just to show women that are not only in their young teens or their late teens or in their 20s or 30s like you, but women that are your mother's age and my age, that it is our experiences that help and inspire other women and push everybody forward, and that our experiences enrich us. So that's really powerful. And certainly where you got that from, and certainly her sense of freedom and her sense of go for broke, take a risk and challenge yourself, allowed you to in part be the woman that you are today.
Yeah, I mean, if I think about now looking at an 18-year-old, I look at 18-year-olds now and I think they look so young. and I think, oh my God, my parents let me go across the Silk Route. We didn't even have an argument. It was like, okay, who is this man? Okay. And it was like, off you go. But having that, I think, trust to allow me to do that was huge, you know, and I'm so grateful because I sometimes think the more you tell people to stop doing things, the more they rebel. And I never really had anything to rebel against. Both my parents were in the police, and maybe they saw a lot of things from people maybe being overprotective and not. There's definitely, you learn from risk, don't you? And if, the more trust you're given to do things, the more you'll actually be able to cope with stuff in the long run.
Absolutely. There's no question. I do empowerment coaching, and I've been around behavioral health for the past 16 years. There is such a thing called oppositional defiance, which means the more you tell me I can't do something, the more I want to do it. So once you're given permission to do something, then you really have to discern for yourself whether or not it's something that you want to do. And like you said, your parents instilled upon you responsibility and accountability, and more than ever trusted your judgment. So that's a plus. Okay, so here you are coming out of university, and then what?
Oh, what did I do then? So I moved to Scotland, to Glasgow. So I got a job working for, it was a charity called Activate, but they had a special project called, it was a charity called Fairbridge, but we had a special project called Activate, working with young boys who had been expelled from school. So we were using the outdoors to teach them leadership, self-worth. So we had 2 days a week outdoor activities with them, and then 2 days a week classroom-based learning. So I did both. And it was actually very funny because the outdoor team was all men and the indoor team was all women. And I used to cross between the two. And I found it really interesting how the boys would respond to the different male and female teachers. And I could then question them and say, well, you wouldn't do that with so-and-so and things like that. So yeah, it was really very humbling work, very, children from very disaffected families, very poor families, but very incredibly worthwhile work.
And then it took you to 25 years old, where you led a bunch of climbers from South Africa overland to Jordan. How did that come about?
Okay, so I guess I then got a job up in Applecross, which is a really remote place up in Scotland. It's this beautiful, it's opposite the Isle of Skye. So you might have heard of the Isle of Skye. It's about 5 hours north of. So I worked there with 16 to 25 year old people with drug and alcohol problems leading expeditions, like lots of walking, trekking, canoeing, sea kayaking expeditions. But we would take long periods off as well. So in between that time, I'd do quite a lot of overseas expedition work as well for different companies. And then that's when I got the phone call about this hot rock trip, this Africa trip. Did I want to leave that? I'd just come out of a long-term relationship, so I kind of needed to escape. So someone asking me, do you want to lead a trip to Africa? I was like, hell yes, I'm off. That's a great idea. So, you know, I was doing a lot of traveling. I'd been to, you know, in fact, just before that trip, I'd been leading a trip in India trekking. And then I came back and then got asked to, if I wanted to do that trip. So, yeah.
Wonderful. So you've led expeditions all over the world.
Yeah.
A long time. Mm-hmm. What have you learned over the years about who you are and what this has done for you?
I think I've learned that I'm pretty good in a crisis. I don't flap too much. Obviously, things can go wrong. I'm really good when I'm kind of, I don't know, when I'm put in a hard situation, I normally rise to it. So I think it teaches you that you're a lot better at things than you think you are.
So it gave you self-confidence. It gave
you
an opportunity to face difficult situations and handle crises, like you said.
Yeah.
What were some of the things you had to face that you were able to overcome?
The Africa trip, I guess, was a lot of being diplomatic at borders, knowing how to get to kind of work your magic, really. Kind of, I think just talking to other people as human beings, being polite, being modest, being respectful gets you a long way. So it doesn't matter what culture you're in, if you can respect that culture, then you normally get something back from that. If you go in demanding, I am a Westerner and I, you know, I'm better than you, it's like, no, you're not. You're in my country. You need to respect our rules and our. So I think just being human with people, just being nice. I don't know that we've had so many hard to think of things, really. There's so many things to deal with all the time. I think you're always problem solving.
Absolutely. Tell me, as a woman in this industry, in leading expeditions and getting out there and forging new pathways, did you find it particularly difficult to be accepted as a woman expert in this field?
Yeah, I guess when I get told I look young for my age now, which is very nice, people. But when I was 25, I obviously looked about 16. So I think people were often a bit bemused that I was in charge. But I also think it helped, because sometimes when you're a 5'3" female, it allows you to use a little bit of charm, use a bit of cheekiness. You can get away with things quite well. So I think there's pros and cons. Sometimes, yes, in different cultures, obviously in Arabic countries where women aren't, it's a different respect, I guess. And normally the men would be dealing with these kind of jobs. So sometimes I would be talking, and I had a driver on the truck, and they would be talking, I would be talking to them, and then they would be answering to him, and then I would be talking, and it would be this very odd conversation. But I couldn't be unhappy with them, because it's just their culture. So you kind of accept it. It can be frustrating. You can't change a whole country's way of living. So you kind of just go with it. But a lot of the time, even though that was their culture, they still were very lovely to me and very nice. I never had particularly bad experiences.
And what about people in your field, other rock climbers? How many women are you? Is there a large population of females doing what you do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, where I live, there are some of the most, I feel quite an average climber, because there's some of the most talented rock climbers in the world. We've got Hazel Finley, who lives just at the end of the lake. We've got Emma Twyford, all of which, both women, you know, climb incredibly hard. Lots of the local women here, you know, a lot of people have moved to the area for the climbing, but it's a huge amount. It's almost probably 50, maybe it's not quite 50-50, but there is a lot of women that climb. But I guess as women then have children, what they can actually do in their free time then obviously slows up. So they change. There's often a natural change in sports, I've noticed, with friends who used to climb, but it takes up a lot of time. So then they'll get more into their road biking or their running, because that can get done in short bursts. You can go out for a quick hour, whereas climbing is often like a half a day or a day. So there's definitely a shift.
Well, I'm glad to hear that there are lots of women making inroads in this, not only for a hobby, but as a business as well.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of ladies that work here and that are friends that all have their own businesses working in the outdoors. And in my other job, where I'm part-time as a teacher of geography and outdoor education, I work for Coventry City Council. And we have inner city children from England coming to the Welsh Hills to a centre called Plas Dolomoc. And the staff team is about 80% women and only about 20% men. And we are all outdoor instructors. We're teachers and outdoor instructors, but it's a huge percentage that are women, which is quite I think in some centres there's a lot less women, but for some reason our centre there's a lot of women. So I don't feel that there's not many of us, because I feel like I'm always surrounded by women. And they're all strong girls, you know. It's always like, do you want to go for a swim in the lake? Do you want to go for a climb? Do you want to go for a bike? I don't feel like we're a minority. I think we're like quite equal.
These are not the women that just want to sit around and have a cup of tea or chat. You know, you want to do that, you know, 5,000 feet up. I understand that where you are in Clanberris, you are very close to one of the largest mountain range, if that not the largest mountain, I think, in Wales. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we've got Snowdon, which is the highest mountain in Wales, just on our doorstep. And it's a real tourist attraction. So you get all walks of life walking up this mountain, often in completely inappropriate clothing and not wearing the right shoes or don't even have waterproofs. So it has become a bit of a, for the local people that obviously grew up here and, you know, a very close-knit community, you've got that whole issue of maybe people buying second homes because it's seen as an area of outstanding natural beauty. So there's a lot of kind of conflict. People don't want to lose the Welsh language. So it's an interesting time, especially due to COVID, where there's a lot of people not working. So they're on furlough. We have a scheme in the UK where the government is paying the wages of our companies while you can't work. So we're very lucky at the moment to have that. But it does mean there's a lot of people as well, because of travel restrictions, a lot of people in the UK will go to Greece and Turkey and Spain and France just for that, you know, just for a week's holiday because it's so close. So all those people that would normally fly abroad because of travel restrictions and self-isolating, like if you come back, you have to like not go into work for 14 days. Everyone's holidaying here, which means the hills, well, Snowdon, if you go to any other hill, they're not on it. It's like, it's busy. It's really busy. So not where I live up the hill a bit. But.
You reminded me, when you said the hills, you reminded me of Julie Andrews and Sound of Music. Oh. Hills Are Alive. Yeah. With climbers. That's really funny. That's funny. So have you climbed Snowdon or most of it? Oh. Or how far have you gotten?
Oh, I've climbed it tons of times. It's a walk. You can walk up Snowdon. There are climbs on Snowdon, rock climbs, but the majority, 99% of people going up Snowdon walk up it. And there's like about 5 different main routes up the mountain. And it's, yeah, people call it hiking. I always call it walking, but hiking, walking, same thing. Yeah, so the tourists go walking up the mountain. They'll say they've climbed it, but if you're a climber, you're like, you walked it. But I'm just being panicking.
If you're not hanging on by the side with your bare hands, then of course you've walked. How tall is that mountain?
Oh God, I should know this.
Okay. We'll look it up for you.
3,000 and I so should know this.
3,000 and something. It's okay. All right.
Yeah. 3,018 meters. Yeah.
So that's something that even I could do. I could walk.
Oh
up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. But I certainly couldn't climb it. That's for sure. So just to get the facts straight, Snowdon is the highest mountain in Wales at an elevation of 1,085 meters or 3,560 feet above sea level, and the highest point in the British Isles outside the Scottish Highlands. It's located in Snowdonia National Park in the county of Gwynedd. It is the busiest mountain in the United Kingdom and the third most visited attraction in Wales. In 2018, it was visited by 558,000 walkers, with an additional 140,000 people taking the train. It is designated as a National Nature Reserve for its rare flora and fauna. And we'll be right back. Are you ready to transform and empower your life by changing the way you think, feel, and act? Then it's time to schedule a coaching call appointment with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified empowerment coach and recovery coach. My style of coaching is part cheerleader and part drill sergeant, always in your corner and at the same time giving you the push you need to truly move forward and exactly what you need to take command of your life. If you are ready for the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I am ready for you. Visit my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says one-on-one coaching. Make an appointment today. Welcome back, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. I'm Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. You are listening to my show, Women Who Push for More. I am having a conversation with Emma Warren, rock climber extraordinaire from the town of Llanberis in Wales. We're continuing her journey. So here you are. Let's go back for a second. You've gone to South Africa, overland to Jordan. You've taken that expedition. You've come home. Yep. And where did your life take you?
Oh, gosh, right. Where did it take me? I think I went to Canada for a little bit to go climbing just for fun, because I was working on that trip, so I was actually earning money. I was in a relationship, but it wasn't a good relationship, so I had to get out of that and did, thank God. Where did I go from there? I did a lot of freelance work, so then I was kind of doing a lot of work, a couple more expeditions. I think I went off to Venezuela, to Peru, Ecuador, taking people trekking in the mountains, and a lot of work in the UK as well. So kind of lots of trekking, Duke of Edinburgh work, and working for different centres around the country, until I got a job at Plaza Brennan, which is the National Mountain Centre. And that was a kind of a turning point for me for like qualifications, I guess, kind of going up the ladder on that sense.
And what did you do there?
So I became something called an assistant instructor. So you work as an, because it's quite a prestigious place to work. So in the UK, you've got the three, I guess, national mountain centres. You've got Plaza Brennan, which is in Wales, but it's actually the English mountain centre. You've got Glenmore Lodge up in Scotland, and then you've got Tollamore, which is in Ireland. So if you're going to work in the outdoors, it's like one of the best places you can work, because you learn so much from incredibly experienced instructors.
So you moved on from there, and just to bring us to where you are now, just kind of give a quick synopsis of how you came to do what you do right now.
Well, I worked there and I absolutely loved it, and I carried on freelancing for Plaza Brennan over the years as well, but I actually hurt my shoulder. I had a labral tear from a wheelbarrow race at a hen do.
wait a minute, stop right there. You've climbed all over the world. You've climbed everywhere. You've done all kinds of expeditions, and you hurt your body, right? This was, you've never really hurt your body before in all of these expeditions, even as a novice climber and all of that stuff. And you hurt your body on the ground in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I know. You can't make it up, can you? Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, so my friend Poppy, who I was at university with, and she had moved to North Wales, and we've remained friends ever since. It was her hen do, and I would say her hen do was a little bit more like a stag do, because we're all quite tomboy. So part of that hen do was deep sea fishing out off the North Wales coast. Quite a lot of drink involved. I think we ended up in a dodgy club in Bangor. Bad. And I think the next day we had a bonfire at the beach, and we were engaging in silly games, and then we were having a wheelbarrow race, and I'm quite competitive, so obviously I wanted to win. Gave it my full beams and tore my shoulder muscle. So that was a disaster.
So that certainly prevented you from doing some of the climbing that you wanted to continue, correct?
Yeah, so that had quite a big effect on my career at that point. So I thought, your body obviously doesn't stay young forever, and I kind of wanted a backup plan. So I decided to apply to do a teacher training course at Aberystwyth University, so in geography. And that's why my thinking, you know, all those years ago paid off, because I'd done the right amount of credits to do that.
About how long are you teaching now?
I think about 7 years now. So, but I was lucky, I was very lucky, because the actual teaching in schools is incredibly full on, as you know. You know, there's a lot of planning, a lot of prep, a lot of sleepless nights, you know, just because you have to do so much work, don't you, to get ready to teach a lesson. But I was very lucky that I finished my teacher training year. I did really well, got good marks. And then I got offered a job at this outdoor centre that needed teachers, because they wanted the geography teaching side to do the field studies. So I got the best of both worlds. I got to teach outdoor education, so all the fun stuff like the climbing and the canoeing and the mountain climbing. But then I also got to deliver the geography field study side as well.
You know, this is really fascinating, especially since you're delivering this to young children, correct? These are curriculums for young children.
Yeah, so this is like, we do a mix of stuff. So we do primary education, and then we do secondary, but then we also do special needs, and then we also work with adults kind of on special adult weekend courses. So we have a really nice variety of work.
I don't find much of that in the United States. I mean, during the, you know, the general regular curriculums, you know, they have regular gym teachers that do all kinds of things indoors, yeah. But there aren't those kinds of activities that you've mentioned, not rock climbing really, or canoeing or things like that. I think there should be more programs that answer to that the way there are in the UK. Yeah. That's fabulous. So would you mind sharing how old you are now with us?
I'm 38 years old.
And if you take a look at her on YouTube, Transformation Talk Radio listeners, she looks 28. Yes, Emma, you absolutely do. So you've been able to do this successfully for the past 7 years. Talk to us a little bit about the kinds of things you impart on your students. What else do you want them to get from what you're doing in addition to just the basic skill of what you're teaching?
I guess one of our main things at Place d'Olomoc, which is the outdoor center, is a sense of respect for the environment. So that's a real thing that we kind of try and make them understand how important nature is. You know, this is the only earth we've got, and we've got to look after it. And as humans, we're kind of abusing it, really. We're kind of take, and we're not really giving back. So it's having that respect for the environment and understanding what things are in nature. I think if you learn the name of a plant, then you probably have more respect for that plant. If you actually spend time in nature, you'll actually have more appreciation for it and more respect. So that's one of our big kind of ethoses of the centre. We even have, every morning we have duty groups, and one of those groups for the kids to go and do is called the Eco Squad, and they you know, they have to go around and count birds and pick up litter and just lots of little jobs that are really fun, but it just gives them a sense of purpose and a sense of responsibility.
That's absolutely marvelous. Do you find, as you're teaching, that there are some young girls in there that could be taking after Emma Warren Rockland?
Oh, yeah. I often say to them, do you want to be an outdoor instructor? Sometimes they're like, no. But sometimes they're like, yeah, that sounds cool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's good to inspire the next generation. Yeah, definitely.
It really is. So when we started this conversation beforehand and you responded to my ad, have you thought about yourself as a woman who pushed for more?
Do you know, I hadn't really, but as the more we talk, the more I think, oh, maybe I did. Makes me appreciate, yeah, that I have actually always strived a little bit to do interesting things and maybe push against the norms. Yeah,
definitely. Without a doubt. I mean, that I saw right away from everything you did from the beginning. And sometimes it's not about pushing for more so that the world knows.
No.
It's about pushing for more for your own personal goals to make your life more fulfilling. So I think that's what you've been gravitating towards. Yes?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think just always wanting to have new adventures, really. You know, as I kind of got this other job, which stopped me from, I guess, doing the expedition side of things as much, because obviously I had a commitment to them and it's quite hard to get the time off to then do the other work that I liked. I started to have a lot more adventures for myself with friends and, you know, my husband. So my husband's a mountain guide. When I met him, he was going through the British Mountain Guide scheme. So we would have a lot of adventures, and I felt like rather than traveling the world, you know, to a lot of developing countries, I saw a lot more of Europe and the European Alps because of, I guess, the way our lives changed. As my husband said, you grew up a bit. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful love story. The mountain climber and the rock climber getting together. Yes.
Yeah.
The expedition tour guide.
Yeah. So when I got the job at Placer Brennan, the National Mountain Centre, he was an instructor already working there. And when I moved to Wales, my friend Jenny, who lives in the Alps, she had heard of this lady called Catherine Thomas, and she rented rooms out in North Wales to, you know, other climbers and things like that. She had like a shared house type thing, and she would go off to Antarctica to work with the penguins for the British Antarctic Survey. So many, I feel like I'm surrounded by strong women, but she was an amazing woman. Anyway, so I moved into this house where my husband was also living, but he'd been working in Scotland. So I had about a month living there, working at the centre before he came back. And then I thought, oh, Hello. Who are you? He's a 6'4" strapping man. And yeah, and we went climbing lots together. And then we obviously had the same passions and the same interests and kind of all worked out. So that was about 10 years ago.
Yeah. That was about 10 years ago. What's on the horizon for you next?
Oh, well, with COVID, who knows? I feel like we're in a bit of treading water time. So I guess at the moment, I think it's really appreciating what you've got on your doorstep. So I don't know if you've watched any of David Attenborough's stuff, but obviously, you know, the world is in a quite a hard, you know, with global warming and things like that. I feel like there's so many adventures that we can have on our own doorsteps. Just during our lockdown, so I don't know what it was like over in your part of the world, but we weren't allowed to travel by car anywhere. We were literally just where we were. We could go out for an hour daily exercise, but they also shut the national park, which is what I'm surrounded by. So suddenly we had all this freedom that kind of got shrunk, and it was really much what you could do like really locally. So I guess what we started to do was we've got a wood behind us, which is a beautiful woodland, but it's starting to get invaded by rhododendron, which is an invasive species, and it stops all the local, like the native plants growing, and it makes the soil acidic and blah, blah, blah. So we took it upon ourselves to start clearing that of rhododendron as something to do. And my husband built an owl box, and now we've got an owl in the wood called Mr. Twiddles. And like, it was really very much about exploring what's in your back garden, almost appreciating the nature that is, like, you start to notice all the tiny birds that would come into your garden because you have so much more time just to appreciate the nature that is, you know, just in our tiny little bit of the world. So I guess it's hard to have plans. I've got lots of things I want to do, places I want to go back to. For example, I've been ice climbing in Norway quite a lot recently, and ski touring in Norway, which is amazing. Ski touring in Iceland was, I'd love to go back there, but I feel like we lucked out on the weather, so I'm not sure I can go. But there's all these like places in Europe I'd love to, you know, carry on climbing and skiing and ski touring. Just little micro adventures, I guess. But at the moment, it's literally adventures on our doorstep, because I think we're possibly heading for another lockdown. So
it's very interesting what you say. And this is a really good message for our listeners. I've done so many podcasts on, of course, COVID-19 and how it has affected us and all of this. Give us an added perspective. The hope is, and the hopefulness is, that even though you have been around the world, you are taking special notice of the things that are closest to you right now. And that's a wonderful thing. And not only are you taking special notice, but you're doing something about it. Like you said, kind of eliminating the backwoods of rhododendron and really making the best of where you are in this more closed situation.
Yeah.
And you can have aspirations and you can have dreams. And we all have to know that no matter what, things will not stay this way forever. Yeah. And certainly we'll all have to wait for a vaccine. And that's part of science. And that's part of how long it goes. And maybe we will be in between different kinds of viruses that come down. I don't know. We don't know what this world holds. But you said some very important things. And that is to really take a look at what you have around you. Understand that the world still is a pretty big one out here, and you can redirect and refocus your thinking to make a difference no matter how large or small your world is. Correct?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like, you know, if we all started planting a couple more trees in each neighborhood, think how many more trees there would be in the world. If everyone planted one tree, if everyone stopped maybe using shower gel in a bottle and had a soap, you know, it's these tiny little changes. But if there's billions of people in the planet, if we all made those tiny changes, people think, I can't make a change. You know, I'm not a vegetarian. I have been in the past, but I've decided, you know, if I buy meat, it's going to be good meat from the local butchers. It's going to be local meats. I'm probably going to eat less meats, try and buy local veg, think about, it's just all those little changes, maybe not buying so much clothing. If you do buy clothing, maybe buy ethical clothing, go on eBay, buy secondhand stuff. think brands like Patagonia are great because they give 1% of their money back to the planet and back to really good causes. So maybe it's thinking about who you spend your money with. Buy local. Don't buy your coffee from a massive chain. Buy it from a lovely little, coffee shop or a tea shop. Just little changes, but they always has a little ripple effect, doesn't it? So we can't do big things, but we can do little things.
And we're all capable of little things, for sure.
Yeah.
All capable of little things. Tell me, give me an idea of what you want to leave with our listeners out there. Some imparting words as to what you have plans for, what we should look for. Tell us a little bit about what's on your site and what we should look for. And also, what kind of message, in addition to what you said, do you want to leave with our viewers and our listeners today?
Ooh, I would say you're probably way more capable than you ever think you are. So maybe if someone offers you something that you think you wouldn't normally try, just say yes. I did that today. I wrote you an email. I wouldn't normally do that. And I thought, do you know what? I need to start saying yes again. Like that 18-year-old self. Yeah, try not to be too scared to try new things. And I think one of the most important things, which I do need to work at, that is not being scared to fail. Because we learn so much when we don't get things right, and that's okay. I think in society, everything, Instagram, Facebook, everything has to be perfect. You have to have the perfect hair and the perfect teeth and the perfect smile, but that's not reality, And actually, it's all right to make mistakes, and it's all right to try new things and not be great at it first time, but it's having a growth mindset. It's being like, willing to like try new things, embrace new things, not being too scared. Not being scared to make a fool of yourself. You're never too old.
That's exactly right. And you are never too old. I am so thrilled to know you. Aww. I am thrilled to hear all of your stories. I gave you some great ideas as to how to proceed, and you could do that in your own little world. And I will be first online to watch that progress. So please let me know how it goes, if you'll take me up on some of the suggestions I gave you.
Yeah. Rubbish.
And your information will be here for our listeners to contact you if they are in the area and they want to know more about you and your story. I am so glad to know you as a true pushy broad, and by your own admission, maybe more of a woman who pushed for more than she actually thought. Yes?
Yes, definitely.
I hope you've enjoyed being with me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been wonderful. I loved it. Thank you.
This is Ellen Stewart, the pushy broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening, and remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.